You are listening to AWOL Radio here on 102.7 CKMS Radio Waterloo, radiowaterloo.ca, broadcasting to all of Waterloo Region. Dan Keller with you today. Check out grandrivermc.ca for more AWOL Radio. In this episode, we get an update from John Hawk, an Indigenous man from the Beausoleil First Nation and longtime activist, who was arrested on July 28th after more than a month of organizing a blockade and camp outside the entrance to Awenda Provincial Park in Ontario. John says the charges that led to his arrest were fabricated and were laid to clear him from the camp, which was one part of a campaign to raise awareness about Indigenous rights and sovereignty, treaty responsibilities, and the federal policies of extinguishing Indigenous title. In this interview, John speaks of the successes of the blockade, including meeting many local settlers who reached out to learn about the land issue and their treaty responsibilities. John then invites his auntie, Verna Friday of Bear Island, Lake Temagami, to discuss jurisdiction. Verna is helping John work on the constitutional aspects of his charges and legal defense. You can support John's legal defense efforts and outreach and organizing campaigns by sending an e-transfer to OjibweRebel@gmail.com. That's OjibweRebel@gmail.com. For more information about John's organizing efforts, check out anishinaabeg.com. That's anishinaabeg.com. Check out on Facebook, Reclamation of Amic Council Fire, Reclamation of AMIK Council Fire. You could check out the Oshkimazdig Camp, that's Oshkimaadzidig Camp, or find John Hawk himself on Facebook, johnny.hawk.161. That's johnny.hawk.161. Can you remind listeners why you had set up this blockade and camp at Awenda Park, and share what happened that led to your arrest?
All right, so I set up this blockade on June 21st to symbolically oppose the tokenization of our people, but to hold ground on the specific land, which is my community's lands, that was been misappropriated. So it's been on the back burner for a while for a community to try to reclaim that, whatever that is, which is usually our the bands, which are Indian Affairs, which is just an extension of the federal government, who don't really represent us as sovereign Indigenous people, as clans. So the people who represent us as Indian Act Chiefs, they utilize a formula that's passed down from the Canadian government, which is called the Lands Settlement. So there's a formula. You submit a claim, and it takes like probably about maybe up to, I don't know, how long the process is, but once they accept it, then you get to proceed with it, and sometimes they just offer you this formula, like they'll compensate you for the historic injustice, and they'll give you compensation money, and you have to utilize that money to buy back the stolen land, which I do not agree with, because our people who are representing us are not legitimately our clan representatives, because we're a nation of people with laws. We have a clan system that we've always been under, but on the illegal Indian Act system and the elected council been imposed on us since 1867 with the BNA Act. So since then, these people making agreements on our behalf as Indian Act chiefs and councils have been giving up Indigenous title to the land. And when you give up Indigenous title to the land, you can't do that as a band office people because they're not representing clan authority. So with all these, to make a long summarize this, I put this up to oppose that. So it's kind of bringing in multi-issues about land claims and how to deal with it properly is one issue. With having our title to the land to legitimately be there is the underlying fact of why I did it. And to gather our people to reorganize ourselves as a traditional clan governance structure, which is not under the Indian Act. And that's who we really are as Anishinaabe people. So I did that to block the road where we have a legitimate right to that land. The second is to reorganize ourselves, reestablish ourselves. And the third is to denounce Canada and to question their validity as a legitimate state within our territories, our indigenous territories, because we have a nation-to-nation agreement with the British Crown. And Canada is separate from the Crown. But they are representing themselves on behalf of the Crown, which they're not doing a good job on that. So we question the validity of the so-called Canada, their provinces, and their laws. And to question the federal policies that they're imposing continuously on our people to extinguish our rights as a people and our ties to the land. So it's a multi-issue objective why we're here, but I tried to summarize that as best as I could.
We'll get back to the camp and some of the details since we talked to you on the day that you launched it, but I just wanted to hop quickly to last week when you were arrested. Could you comment what happened? Why did they arrest you? What happened to the blockade?
So there's been all kinds of non-Native people coming to listen and learn. We put a thing up there that says land issue. You're welcome to learn. So on our Facebook, there's lots of videotape of me being peaceful and a lot of people. We did the speaker's corner. And there's a lot of people, non-Indigenous, who support and did a speaker's corner that they support what I'm doing. So I asked a Union of Ontario Indian rep to come and talk about a nation-to-nation relationship we have with the Crown through the wampum belt that he carries and talks about. His name's Morris Switzer, so he invited him. So I invited him to come down. I invited Bruce Danton, and Bruce came, said he was going to come on August the 7th. Then I invited some other politicians, Jagmeet Singh. Didn't get back to me, but I had some people who were in the political atmosphere of Canadian society agree to come. So I asked for the park to see if we can utilize the amphitheater, and they straight out denied me. A week before, I sent them a letter to ask that we can work together in the spirit of truth and reconciliation in the time and era we're in right now, nationally, when we're trying to resolve past issues in a respectful way, and they straight out denied my request of that. So then I put down more trees in their response to that. That was on Thursday. Friday I put down more trees. Then I went home on a Saturday night just to hand out brochures to educate people from my community what I'm doing and to try to mobilize our community. Got a phone call early in the morning, 8:30, that the park was taken down to blockades and that the cops wanted to talk to me. So there was, on the reserve, there was probably about four OPP stopping everybody from going to town, and they were looking for me. They wanted me to come in, so I was kind of weary about why they were doing that. And my cousin, who was the one last at the blockade, said, yeah, they're coming in, and he couldn't do anything because it's only for the past month and a half. It's only been about three of us, so we can't physically hold off the cop presence. He said, they're coming in, so I rushed to town, me and my mom, and they stopped me going in with my mom, and they said, okay, Mr. Hawk, come over the truck, and there's a video that I was sharing. So they arrested me on a fabricated charge, which was uttering threats to the park ranger, to the superintendent of the park ranger. And he said I was threatening his life, but I wasn't. I was reminding him about the Ipawash inquiry, where there was three police officers of the OPP that all had car accidents before they were to testify in the Ipawash inquiry. Because at that time in the Ipawash inquiry, they wanted to know who sent them in to shoot and kill an unarmed, you know, who sent them in.
Right.
So they were going to tell on Mike Harris, but
yeah,
three cops happened to have accidents before to testify at the Ipawash inquiry. So I told that park ranger, before you start interfering with our right to be here, I would suggest that you would be careful what you're doing, because your government may make you disappear.
Right.
So he put that as a threat of me threatening him. I said, let me be clear, I'm not threatening you. I'm just saying this is what your government can do.
That does seem like it might be a fabricated charge to be able to move in and clear the camp away.
Yeah, and once they did that, they said I was threatening him. So there was like a ridiculous amount of OPP. There was like about 15 of them. And uttering threats is just a minimal charge. It doesn't take 15 to 18 OPPs to come up on someone to take them away. So they took me to another detachment, which was in Wasaga Beach, where they should take me to Midland. So they took me to Wasaga Beach, and I was there for 24 hours. Then they took me to Bell Court, which was in Barrie, which was a 45-minute drive. And they did that intentionally, so I wouldn't come out on my own reconnaissance and come back and start following more trees and push them out. They did that intentionally. They took down our older camp, which I've been there for 8 years. They took down our log cabin that we set up in 2012.
Have they communicated why they took down the cabin where that camp has been, or no?
Nope. They just said I've been in there too long. So they utilized the cops with a fabricated offense that I was threatening him, and that's all they needed to get me out of there. But I was just educating them on the Ipperwash inquiry. So right now I'm hanging out with my auntie, and she's helping me prepare. My next court date is August 22nd to speak on these charges of uttering threats. So I'll hand it to her and let her talk about the sovereignty aspect.
Yeah, my name is Verna Friday. I come from Bear Island, Lake Tomogamy, and I'm one of the admins on the campsite since it started. Just helping Johnny here prepare a defense. So what's happened is way more serious than just the what they classified as what uttering threats or whatever. The seriousness of it is goes much deeper. You know, you're looking at a 1700s council rock. You know, that indicates that you know, the indigenous people have been there for a long time. You know, predates Canada, predates a whole lot of stuff. So this is the argument is going to be on lack of jurisdiction by the OPP and the parks, and it's going to question the establishment of the park itself there. So, you know, we're going to get right to the root of the whole thing. He'll be seeking a date for a constitutional challenge to be able to present these kind of jurisdictional arguments. You know, they're going to be presented with that soon. Before there can be a court case involving the charges, the constitutional question is going to arise first, and that will have to be dealt with first. So they know that we'll get into some deeper issues. So they opened up a big can of worms, so to speak, right?
And the charges that were put on John, none of them relate to the actual, like, the blockade or trespassing, anything like that?
No. No, they seem to be like a personal position that the parks guy, you know, felt were being against him. It sounds like he misinterpreted what John was trying to tell him. He was setting an example, you know, a story, you know, for more as a teaching as opposed to a threat. That's what we're working on now. We have to look into the history of the area and to determine, you know, if there's no agreements that apply to that area, then it's unsurrendered Indian territory and the Royal Proclamation goes into effect. And under the terms of the Royal Proclamation, that there can be no patents, there can be no, you know, assertion of any kind by the settler government until a treaty has been made for an area. So that's the whole basis for the, you know, for the argument that we're going to put forward.
Right. I was just wondering if you had anything else you wanted to mention around this issue, or around anything else that John had brought up earlier around the revisiting of the Williams Treaty. And
we've been looking into, you know, for many years, quite a few of us have been looking into and have come across information where that the Canada itself, you know, the Canada Corporation is does not have the qualifications to call itself a nation. And when you look at it, they are going by a constitution Their constitution is what, the British North America Act, which was developed in another country, right? And it was never ratified over here. When Sir John A. Macdonald set up his government over here, he was supposed to set it up then nation to nation with the hereditary people here, the hereditary indigenous.
Right.
And that never happened.
Right.
A lot of people don't know this history. You know, they just take it for granted that what Sir John Emmett did back in 1867 was the right thing, and it wasn't. They ignored the people here who had their customary form of governance already in place.
Well, it's definitely not taught in most schools, at least when I was going through the schooling system. And I know John has been doing work at the camp to do some of that kind of grassroots, like person-to-person relationship building and education.
That's right. You know, just discussing the history and how it pertains to today, what's going on today, you know. Yeah. He's done a good job in encouraging people to, you know, to come and visit the camp and to see what's going on and to listen and understand.
And so my court date is August 22nd, and I'm going to be proposing a constitutional issue. So everybody has that right, even non-Indigenous people, to ask for a certified copy of the Constitution, which they can't provide.
Right.
So I suggest everybody to know this stuff. Because once you're on Indigenous territory, to acknowledge where you're living on, when they issue a charge, you insist on a notice of a constitutional question, and that's where you proceed to ask them to bring upon, before they can put charges on you, to prove that they have the jurisdiction over to do that. But you gotta address things on yourself, so you're gonna have to know like what territory you're on as a non-native. And who gives you that right to be on that territory? Because I think settler communities should not represent themselves under settler law. They need to ask permission on where, because we need to collectively challenge this fraud that is called Canada and the Crown within the jurisdiction of Indigenous territories. So we can, that can be another story for another time.
And I would love to get into that with you in the future for sure. What's next in terms of the camp? I know you have the court date. Do you want court support this early in the process?
I wouldn't mind if, because I just hopped off a drum set to get here to get some legal, well, I don't want to call it legal advice, but the assertion of rights from my auntie. So I am doing a lot of traveling and hawking off personal stuff, chainsaws, and right now I don't have the time to paint. So if there people can help somehow, I got my email, OjibweRebel@gmail.com. If you can share that up. And I'm accountable with all things, too, with where money's being spent. So it's not just going to my personal use. It's actually going to help when I'm advocating.
Right on. Yeah, we'll for sure get that posted.
I just want to put it this way, that I found out before we do an action, we need to educate and mobilize within our communities first, because I try to make an intention to get support of this vision, and I've been there for 5 weeks, so people from my community, there's only like 4 of us, so now I gotta go in my community to go door to door and rally the troops. But, you know, like sometimes us in this area, these Ojibwe's are passive, man. I really commend the Six Nations people of how they stand up with their communities. It's really hard for our people to, where we're at right now, on how to do things, like someone like myself. I just want to share that.
Right on.
Okay, brother.
All right, John, thanks for taking the time to talk with us. Good luck preparing for the upcoming court and everything else.
This has been our interview with Indigenous activists John Hawk and Verna Friday, speaking about John's recent arrest following his more than month-long blockade of Vilwenda Provincial Park. You can support John's legal defense efforts and outreach and organizing campaigns by sending an e-transfer to OjibweRebel@gmail.com. That's OjibweRebel@gmail.com. For more information about John's organizing efforts, check out Anishinaabeg.com. That's Anishinaabeg.com. Check out on Facebook, Reclamation of Amic Council Fire, Reclamation of AMIK Council Fire. You could check out the Oshkimazdig Camp, that's Oshkimaadzig Camp, or find John Hawk himself on Facebook, johnny.hawk.161. That's johnny.hawk.161. For more AWOL Radio, check out grandrivermc.ca. And thanks for tuning in.